Martin Shkreli, the former pharmaceutical executive who has been convicted on securities fraud charges, got his bail revoked yesterday. He had sent out a social media message offering $5,000 for a lock of Hillary Clinton's hair, a message the judge interpreted as a very public threat. What was he thinking? This is a man who was already successful before he made the high-risk moves that got him sent to jail. Andrew Snyder is a psychotherapist who works with white-collar offenders, and we asked him to take us inside that mindset.
I don't think anyone ventures out in their career with the expectation that they'll end up in prison at some point for a crime they've done in relationship to their career, their profession.
We don't give that much thought to the psychology of the white-collar criminal, but that's been your milieu, yeah?
That's my niche. I explore, I work with offenders who've been prosecuted and are facing prison for white-collar crimes. It could be bank fraud, tax fraud, insider trading. And they find themselves in their 30s, 40s, never in trouble with the law before, and they're heading to prison. It's a scary time for them. Were there signs before? There could have been, but I've discovered that usually there's a perfect psychological storm that's brewing for most of them that I've worked with. They've had hardships, challenges, and in a twist of fate, they decide to cross the line and engage in white-collar crime. Many with the expectation that they're going to cover it up or repay the money that they stole.
Part of that is being a function of their access to sums of money, right?
Opportunity, certainly. Whereas other people would maybe steal from the till or from the inventory at a warehouse, for instance. They oftentimes have access to large sums of money. And the wherewithal, the intelligence, the know-how, excuse me.
Well, a large sum of money, if you're in the right position, can be a keystroke away on your computer, right?
A few
keystrokes.
Yeah, indeed. One of the cases that actually catapulted me into doing this work was a prominent New York attorney, Mark Dreyer, who... I guess it was about 2008, right around the time of Bernie Madoff, was discovered to have committed a $400 million fraud. And his began taking loans out. He couldn't get money in his own name. He didn't have the credit. He wanted to start his own boutique law firm. And he didn't have the credit, so he started taking money out in a client's name and keeping the money for himself to finance his law firm. And it started at $2 million, and then he realized I need a little bit more money. It became $5 million. The end result was $400 million fraud. Whew. Yeah, and he's doing a 20-year sentence now in federal prison.
But that, clearly his ambitions snowballed, ran away with him. I bet he started out thinking he was going to pay back that $2
million. He sure did. There's a lot of magical thinking.
Yeah.
And it's not grounded in reality. In his case, he had had some hardships. He was going through a divorce. His law partnership broke up. He lost a case that he had been working on for about 10 years. Again, he was in New York, and it was right around the time of 9/11. And I imagine, he didn't say this, but I imagine, what do I got to lose? I'm going to go for broke. And he started taking the money out, and in another person's name, one of his clients, a billionaire, and he never did repay the money.
One of the things, I'm going to guess that one of the things that your clients do is spend a lot of time giving themselves permission, a lot of rationalizing, justifying. He's a billionaire, he won't miss it, right? In the case of that last
rationalization is a big key. And people I've spoken with, they've never appreciated the downside until they get caught.
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed Rumi Khan, who was involved in the Raj Rajaratnam case out of New York. He's a billionaire hedge fund owner that went to prison, serving an 11-year sentence. And she was a cooperating witness. She ended up going to prison for a year. And she told me, she said that the prison sentence was easy enough. I got through that. The tough reality is once you're finished and out of prison, there's no work.
Yeah.
Your reputation is gone. Your name is mud.
Nobody will touch you.
Exactly.
And the thing to which you have devoted your life.
And your education, invested so much. And it would really benefit them had they had someone that they could have spoken with. I tend to believe they're isolated.
Mm-hmm.
They don't discuss these personal challenges they're having with others.
Mm-hmm.
They come up with some wild solutions.
You know, this sounds like other types of slipping downward things that people do. Slipping into alcohol, slipping into drugs, slipping into behavior that maybe justifies itself to you a little bit at a time. You know, I got drunk last night and I didn't do so bad, so I'm going to get drunk again tonight. You know that what I'm saying? That kind of sliding into behavior a step at a time.
I just heard recently, and I don't recall where, if you're digging a hole, or if you found yourself in a hole, stop digging. and it's really true. Many of the clients say it's a slippery slope. Once you cross that line, it begins to get easier each time you do it.
Yeah.
And again, if you're not accountable to anyone, if you're not discussing these choices you're making with other people, it gets easier and easier.
Sounds as if family and relationships are a saving grace to some people to move away from temptation.
Family, of course, is critical.
Yeah.
They don't go to you to work.
Right.
They're not with you in the office. If you don't have a mentor, someone that you can talk with about these problems, or these issues, these challenges, it could spell disaster for some people.
Well, there's one thing that you mentioned, Andrew, as a part of the profile, people who had been through hardships. And it has often seemed to me that people who have been at one point in their life really poor have this resolve, make or break, never to go back there. Have you seen some of
yes,
that?
Yes, it comes up a lot. People from impoverished backgrounds.
Yeah, never going back there.
Single family, raised by their mother, poor. And they had the opportunity to go to school. They're intelligent. They make the right decisions career-wise. And they're ambitious, highly competitive, and a desire to win.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've discovered is, and it's been written about as well, many business executives don't have an awareness of the emotions that drive them to succeed. And what you're bringing up, the impoverished background,
mm-hmm.
not going back, they will go to great lengths to win, to fill themselves up. And it becomes more or less about the money and more about success by each step of winning. Am I making sense?
Yes, you are. Yeah, very much. And in fact, what you're most making sense about to me is that I'm really getting the feeling that at the highest level of financial dealings, having the advice, the counsel of a psychologist can be very helpful.
Indeed. There's a certain personality set, I find, with some of the offenders.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned, they're ambitious, they're competitive, they want to succeed, but there's also the thrill of winning.
Yeah.
And they will sometimes impulsively engage in practices for the sake of an adrenaline rush versus noble, honorable results.
Yeah.
It's more personal, impulsive, lacks concern for people who may be hurt.
Mm-hmm.
A good example, out of Alaska, a dentist in Anchorage was, I guess, about 6 months ago. It was in the papers. He had been charged by the licensing bureau for extracting a patient's tooth riding a hoverboard and recording it. It's ridiculous.
Just, as a stunt? Do you mean just to show off?
I think he had mastered his skills as a dentist, and that was no longer a challenge. The challenge was to extract the tooth riding a hoverboard and then to have a record of it by someone videotaping it. I'm not sure what came first. I think it was thereafter they discovered he was also committing insurance fraud. So he's been indicted by the U.S. attorney. His license has been revoked because of the practice of the hoverboard. But there's that personality that's not enough.
Yeah.
He has to spice the game up even a little bit more. He's mastered what everyone in his profession has done, but he's going to take it a little further.
You know, Andrew, this is an argument in the favor of simple pleasures, isn't it?
Indeed. Indeed. Or creating, and that's where the work that I do as an executive coach, finding other activities that fulfill that thrill-seeking behavior.
Yeah.
In a productive way, a constructive way that doesn't harm anyone, that gives purpose to your life. There are people who thrill seek, who need that rush. It could be mountain biking.
Yeah.
It could be climbing the Alps. These certain goals that they can set for themselves outside of work that will fulfill them.
Andrew Snyder is a psychotherapist and advisor who prepares white-collar first-time offenders and their families for imprisonment. He's a retired California correctional officer and a marriage and family therapist.